I hope you've recovered from daylight savings because we need you alert for our Friday news roundup. I'm here with co-host David Figler and contributor Andrew Corrali, creator of The List.Vegas. And today on CityCast Las Vegas, The Boring Company is continuing to expand despite reports of a dangerous workplace. A member of the Nevada System of Higher Education Board of Regents called trans athletes men masquerading as women. And will Las Vegas become Hollywood 2.0? It's Friday, March 15th. I'm Sarah Lohman, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. I just realized this. I have to share a random piece of information, but in my hometown of Hinckley, Ohio, March 15th is Buzzer Day, and we have a whole celebration for the return of turkey vultures. We were a Jeopardy question once, so happy Buzzer Day to you both.
Oh, thank you.
Happy yep. Buzzard Day. Sometimes I feel like a vulture.
It involves pancakes, so it's a pretty good celebration for the humans.
I'm so confused, but I'm going with it.
Well, you said buzzard, right? Not buzzard.
Buzzard. Yeah, the bird. Okay. The carrion-eating, projectile-vomiting, naked-headed condor-like thing.
I want to go where there's a buzzer day. Just keep everyone hits a buzzer and chimes in. I love that.
We could have a buzzer day, I'm sure. There's no answers, only buzzards. Okay. So the LVCVA is supporting a boring company expansion. That name always trips me out. Andrew, can you give us a look into boring that I'm sure won't be boring?
Of course. Of course. Yeah. So sludge spills, skin rashes, OSHA violations, and troubled tunnels.
Alleged.
Alleged troubled tunnels. No, I'm not talking about the annual AVN Awards party.
Oh,
I'm talking about the zizzing. I'm talking about the ongoing saga of the Boring Company's Vegas Loop project. Despite a recentish spate of high-profile safety issues, on Tuesday, the LVCVA board approved two new tunnels for the Vegas Loop, Elon Musk's underground transportation system in the resort corridor. Convention Authority CEO Steve Hill gave them a vote of confidence, saying, "They are committed to doing this right. We're going to stay involved to make sure that that's the case." Notably, Las Vegas Mayor Carolyn Goodman was the only member to oppose the agenda item. And so this is really interesting because Hill's, you know, the LVCVA's vote of confidence comes despite the fact that this $53 million project has had its share of troubles.
Yeah, no kidding.
And yeah, in June, the Boring Company received 8 citations from Nevada OSHA for hazards in its loop tunnels and carried a $112,000 fine. And in that case, about 15 to 20 workers were injured, purportedly exposed to harmful chemicals resulting in skin irritation, skin rashes, and chemical burns. On a sort of, you know, less whelming note, you know, the loop doesn't seem to exactly, you know, be working as advertised.
No.
Tesla's, you know, the Tesla's shuttling conventioneers around apparently top out at like 40 miles per hour versus the zoomy, futuristic sounding 155 miles per hour figure that was batted around when the project was first approved. And this other figure I see that is supposed to move 4,400, you know, people per hour. That sounds a bit far-fetched to me. But, you know, the LVCVA, I think they've just sort of like affirmed that they are joined at the hip with this project, you know, hell or high water. The part that was approved, the two new lines would travel south on Paradise Road, potentially as far as the Thomas and Mack Center. So, the tunnel saga continues.
Blech. I mean, it's not matching Musk's vision for a completely underground system of 150 mile out tunnels for sure.
Nope.
They top out at 40 miles an hour, and it's having used them to go to the fancy food show this past winter. It's slow. I waited 20 minutes both directions to get on the right car. It takes a lot of time for 4 people to get in and out of a single car versus, let's say, 100 people on and off a 3-car tram. Put a train in it, Elon, instead of your stupid, stupid cars. But that's just my personal opinion. But that's what we're here for.
I think that's actually where I'm sort of hanging up on this because Steve Hill's language is really interesting when you hear him, you know, when you hear him speak, because the language he's using is more like a disappointed father who's sort of, you know, in on this project, you know, as opposed to like an angry boss who can, you know, tell Boring Company to get with the program and, you know, fix these problems and, you know, shape up.
Look out for our public services here in this city.
Right, right.
Why are we just letting this man, like, just dig shit? Something's good. Ugh, okay, so let's get into it.
So it's like, you know, it's kind of like this in for a penny, in for a pound, sunk cost syndrome, whatever you call it. But it seems that the LVCVA is kind of joined at the hip with the Boring Company. And I wish I could say, like, yeah, they just need to, like, fire them and hire a new company. But, you know, what kind of happens with these big kind of specialized infrastructure projects where there are only a few, you know, big companies that could do it?
Nobody asked for this,
no.
Andrew.
Well, very true.
This wasn't something that the city was like, can we please have an underground system where taxis could go 40 feet under the surface level?
This was presented
by the Boring Company saying, hey, here's this project. It's quick, it's safe, it's great, and it's going to solve all of your traffic problems. And I don't believe that they have really met any of the serious benchmarks for any of those representations.
We asked for public transportation. We got folly.
Right.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to rein us in. I appreciate the Friday morning rage as I always do. First of all, what does LVCVA actually stand for?
Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority. It is essentially our marketing agency to promote Las Vegas to the world and make sure that as many people come here as possible. That's kind of their very generic version of their mission statement. They're marketing people.
David, do you think that their reputation has been hurt by backing the Boring Company, especially after the reports were reading the citations that they've been given by OSHA and then the other alleged safety violations down there?
No, I think their reputation is we care about Strip City. And if it's good for Strip City in our minds, who cares what the impact is on the community? And here's the thing. They have a leader, this guy named Steve Hill. They have alleged oversight from the various municipalities. And that was the vote that they talked about where Mayor Goodman was the only dissenting vote. But the bottom line is they don't bring anyone in front of this meeting from the Boring Company to explain themselves. Because like right now, Boring is denying that they committed any OSHA violations, right?
Yeah.
But those allegations were pretty damn specific. And so when Steve Hill, essentially the head of the LVCVA says, I talked to them, it's all good, and now we're going to help them too. It's like, I appreciate he's a government affairs guy, he knows how the system works, but I don't think that the LVCVA, our marketing entity, has an industrial safety division.
Yeah.
I don't think that they have urban planners. So when he talks about this is going to be a transportation alternative, I don't think that comes from a place of engineering and science. And so their reputation is to be pro-marketing, pro-Vegas, cheerleader, cheerleader, cheerleader. And so, yeah, this falls right in line with it, that they don't even call a single individual from Boring to explain themselves.
In a public setting.
In a public setting. And so essentially what they're doing is they're saying, we got it all under control. Trust us. And it's okay that if worker safety isn't a priority, first, second, or third, the end will justify the means. And that is friggin' shitty in my mind, that at least have the transparency, make Boring Company at least do a mea culpa, explain how it happened and what specifically they're going to do to make sure that it's all safety. Like,
yeah.
We haven't even talked about what happens to this allegedly toxic sludge, which whenever you're mining underneath the ground, and this goes down 40 feet, you're going to have extracted materials that need to go somewhere.
Where does it go?
Where does it go? Where is it temporarily stored? I mean, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, follow-up question. Clearly, the three of us are, like, really frustrated by this project and all the news coming out. Do you think that the LVCVA is seeing something that we aren't in this project?
Oh, no, not at all. And to David's point, I think that at this point, their relationship is such that they are going to be an advocate for the project because, you know, they are, you know, like, literally and figuratively in so deep. And David, maybe you know the answer to this, but, you know, is there a world in which an alternative LVCVA in an alternative universe could say, forget this, let's convert these tunnels to a more conventional shuttle system and cut our losses and say goodbye to Boring? It just seems to me like, you know, that's just, you know, not going to happen given the nature of the LVCVA. Not having, again, as a marketing agency on steroids, they don't have the sort of institutional knowledge to make that kind of pivot.
as I understand it, Andrew, you can't repurpose these. Like, it is a one-purpose tunnel system.
God.
So I want to ask you, Sarah, do you think, knowing what you do about Las Vegas and its marketing and its best face forward, that there is any red line that would stop this project from happening? Like, do we need actual worker deaths for them to be so shamed that this project should...
No.
You think worker deaths won't stop this?
Worker deaths won't stop it. Because when has worker deaths ever stopped capitalism, the march of capitalism before, David? That's a go super socialist on anybody. But this is just like, to me...
What about an environmental study? Should they do an environmental study? I don't think that's been required. I don't think it has.
Elon Musk is not going to care about any of those things. And the company doesn't seem to. And you know what? I have a theory about the company's name, which I haven't looked up. But I think they're calling it the Boring Company, not just because it bores holes, obviously, but there's a double entendre there. And I think it's a little bit of like, we're just boring. Look the other way. So it's a way for people to literally look at it and be like, oh, well, they're just doing boring stuff and ignore what is helping. I mean, do you think, David, that LVCVA can do anything to help the Boring Company's tarnished reputation at this point?
Yeah, continue to support it. Continue to allow the proof of concept, because we're the only place where this is happening. It's been rejected in other cities, and I'm not going to speculate, but I understand in some of the reading that I did that when those other cities called for full environmental impact studies, they kind of folded up their tent and moved to another place.
I'm sure.
So, you know, take from that whatever you will. The thing is that, no, I think the LVCVA's is absolutely going to bolster their reputation because it's going to be a working project no matter what it takes, apparently. Look, it might be a very fine, fancy, fun thing. I don't think it's a transportation alternative that's been debunked on this podcast and other places, that it is a viable alternative for public transportation. But by the same token, some people really like it and they think it's cool. And there is a mindset that as long as Vegas keeps doing fun, cool stuff, you know, a la the Sphere, a la, you know, F1 races, a la whatever, that, you know, Vegas will continue to thrive. And so that is a mindset.
Our hits and misses are interesting. I think the Sphere is amazing. Obviously, the Super Bowl went well. F1 sucked. And these tunnels are terrible.
Yeah.
Andrew, what do you think the Boring needs to do moving forward to, like, fix this mess and fix their reputation?
Well, they need to fix the mess and fix their reputation.
Oh.
But I would love to see the LVCVA, you know, bring out the stick and issue something that is remotely flavored like an ultimatum that says, you know, make the construction of these safe, you know, deliver what you promised, or we're going to turn these tunnels into a really cool Meow Wolf attraction, which I would totally see. But, and I guess it's really troubling how, you know, this seems more like the LVCVA is advocating on behalf of the Boring Company as opposed to
the people,
the public, or Vegas's, you know, image, or, you know, safety and public health and welfare. So yeah, it's unfortunate.
Just be more transparent, you know, like if shit's going down there that's bad, let us know. And, you know, collectively, we can either fix it or judge whether or not it is, you know, crossing the line. But as these things come out, look, I don't know why we had to wait 7-8 months before it was reported. And it wasn't first reported in local papers, FYI. It was reported in national publications.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we all need to be doing a little bit better on the accountability side, because as new things come out and they're discovered, it's very frustrating.
Yes.
To support a project like this.
Nothing nowadays should be built on the bodies of the dead. So, like, let's get this fixed before something really bad happens down there in these tunnels. And you know what? I think the best fix is what you said, Andrew. Let's get Meow Wolf in there and just call it a day.
I'm there.
Oh, that'd be the best.
Mm-hmm.
Or bicycles. Hey, it's David Figler, and one of my favorite food festivals is coming back to town. It's Vegas Unstripped over at the Palms Hotel on Saturday, May 18th. Over 24 chefs from some of Las Vegas's most talked about restaurants creating original, unique menu items they've never made before. Chef creativity at its best. We're talking chefs from Partage, Esther's Kitchen, Milpa, EDO, and more, including this year's James Beard Award finalist Steve Kessler from Aroma. Tickets are $150 and are all inclusive of food and drink. So you don't have to pay for anything once you're inside. No hidden up charges. I went last year and it was so crowded in the best possible way. We got one remarkable dish after another. And while it was a little indulgent, here's the best part. The net proceeds go to local charities. So head on over to VegasUnstripped.com to get your tickets now. We'll see you there.
All right. So the next thing that is, I think, is going to get us riled up is
riled up.
So we've got a guy on the Board of Regents on the Nevada System of Higher Education. He made some anti-trans comments and he is now doubling down on those comments as opposed to apologizing. David, what is going on?
Yeah, so the Nevada System of Higher Education, or NSHE, is a 13-member board of individuals elected by us to essentially administer our college system, which has 8 institutions, including UNR and our own UNLV. They oversee budgeting, set policy for about 100,000 students, and this would naturally include students who are LGBTQ. So one of those elected regents, Patrick Boylan, made some public statements, and I'm going to start with, he made some public statements back in 2022 about race, including derogatory language. That was bad enough that it seemed to be the motivation for the Board of Regents to actually pass a system-wide new resolution to, quote, condemn and thwart discriminatory language and behaviors.
So this is the same guy, but this we're not even talking about this incident. This is a fresh incident.
This is his pregame.
Exactly. Right. He previously made comments causing them to make new policy, I guess. So now Boylan is once again in the news for disparaging comment he's made about students who are transgender and, like you said, athletes. And, well, as expected, many groups are calling for his resignation, including the Nevada Faculty Alliance, the Nevada graduate students. And then other regents are coming out with statements. Campus presidents are coming out with statements, like Brian Sandoval. The regents and the presidents aren't, per se, naming him by name and calling for his resolution or recall. They are expressing support for all students, of course, and reaffirming the impropriety of comments like that and the importance of diversity and inclusion, words that are very much in the public conversation now across this country. And to date, Boylan said, you know what? I appreciate everyone calling for me to resign, and that ain't going to happen. He's double downing, right? He's saying, well, I could have chosen my words better, but I'm standing by my sentiment. And of course, he's standing by the First Amendment. And he has attacked his critics, especially those on the board, as being politically motivated. So basically, he is unthwarted, to use that language.
Yeah.
And the tensions continue.
So, I mean, I think that there is, in our current culture, a lot of fear of cancel culture and fear of saying the wrong thing. And, you know, my take on this is it's not the mistake you made or the sort of unknowing thing that you said. It's your reaction in the aftermath. That's my feeling on it. You don't get canceled when you say the anti-trans comment. You get canceled when you double down on it instead of apologizing, learning, and moving on. And it seems like this guy has not moved on because he already did this with race and somehow he got quieted down, but he's still on the Board of Regents. So I guess the simple question is, should he resign or is this covered under his First Amendment rights? What do you think, Andrew?
Well, I think both could be true, right? And sure, this could be, quote, you know, covered under his First Amendment, you know, First Amendment rights. But also, I think if you're representing higher education and you're saying these kind of, you know, bigoted, discriminatory,
hurtful and dangerous
things, then I just don't think that reflects well on the institution and the values that higher education reflects. So to me, it's a no-brainer that he should resign, but not because he said these things in the first place, but because, as you pointed out really smartly, that he doubled down, right? It's not the crime, it's the cover up, right? As they say.
Right.
Yeah. So I think it's a no brainer to me. And another thing that kind of bugs me is he made some crack about, you know, about woke culture.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's this sort of, you know, word war happening over woke culture and woke and kind of who owns it and whether it's a badge of honor or whether it's, you know, a sign that you're an angry person who wants to control what other people think, right? And I always just remind people, when I hear the word woke, that just, you know what that says to me? That says, historically marginalized people are challenging systems of power that they haven't before. And, you know, people are you know, asking questions about systemic injustice. That's what woke means. If that's woke, you know, I'm hella woke, right? And so I always want to sort of, you know, clarify what that means, because I don't want that to turn into this nuclear, you know, semantic football that a lot of hard right people want it to. And so I always feel, like I have to like sort of pop that, you know, footnote up there.
Woke to me just means like be nice.
Thank you. Yeah.
Be nice to people. Use the names and terms that they want you to. It's not hard. So like if you can't make that effort, if you're anti-woke, that just signals to me that like you're not interested in being kind to other people. David, what do you think? Should he be out of there or should he be given another chance?
Look, this wasn't a classroom situation where they were talking historically about the way that we view things or discuss things or anything like that. This wasn't that sort of, you know, what we want to foster in especially higher education, which are robust debates about not the rightness or wrongness of particular words, but the context of things and historical import. And like you said, Sarah, like the potential dangers of making certain choices and especially word choices, etc.
Trans people are getting murdered. Like,
exactly.
They don't need any help in that front. Yeah.
Right. And so this isn't a sociology class where he's like throwing this out there to like be provocative or something. He is a public official who is in charge essentially of the way that campuses operate. And, you know, he is emblematic of the system. And when he throws comments like that in there, it is highly problematic. Now, should he resign or just face the voters? Because that's interesting, too. He's an elected official. It's
right.
Not like he was appointed. It's not like this is a job he otherwise, you know, was promoted from, you know, merit. This, you know, he's the representative of District 5. District 5 is a very large segment of Southern Nevada. It goes all the way from like Valley View and Arville through this like kind of wedge all the way up to Nellis and Craig through North Las Vegas. So he represents a lot of people. It's a 6-year term. I believe he was elected in 2020. So he's back up again, not this year, but in the next election cycle.
Clock's ticking.
And so should he just face the voters with that? And, you know, do we want to leave these kind of things to voters? It's all very interesting.
I have a friend who's Air Force and fairly conservative. And one day he turned to me and said, "Do you think we're focusing too much on trans people?" And I was like, "Yes, this is a place where you and I can agree. This is a small segment of the population that is just trying to figure out their shit. And they've got this laser, this deadly laser focus on them. Wouldn't it be nice if people could just figure things out without, like, you know, the head of education in the state saying discriminatory and hateful comments?" You know, once a week we do an angry morning talk show.
No, not always. I mean, there's always sometimes good news. Like, we very well could have been just congratulating the Lady Rebels, the women's basketball team out of UNLV, who just won the championship last Wednesday night. And, you know, we're going to be going to the big tourney.
Let's move to some more positive moves. Some more positive moves. Yeah, let's go for it. Positive moves. The American film market is going to be held here in Las Vegas this year. So what that is, it's going to happen here in early November. And it is historically has been in L.A. and Santa Monica, you know, by the epicenter of the film industry, by Hollywood. But they wanted to move it out of there. There's no specifics given by the American film market. I'm sure it has to do with all the reasons conventions are coming here, that the facility are better, that it is less expensive, and therefore it can be more inclusive. Because what the American film market does, it's not a name that rolls off your tongue, I'm not going to lie, but it is a conference of about 7,000 people. And although there, you know, are things like people will come to like represent places to film movies, you know, there is sort of an expo involved, mostly it's an 8-day event to network, sell, finance, and acquire films. So this is where films are literally bought, sold, and like production is sort of set up for them. So it's a big deal for the film industry. They do focus on a lot of what might be called independent films. So moving it to a place like Las Vegas, I imagine, can make it more open to more film production houses and also sort of small-time first-timers. Like Promising Young Woman, for example, is one of the movies that came out of the annual AFM. So they're coming to Vegas, they're coming to the Palms, and this might represent a larger sea change and maybe the furthering of Las Vegas as an extension of L.A., because there is talk of a film studio being built in Summerlin and another one by Durango. You know, one of our famous residents, Mark Wahlberg, he says he wants to make Las Vegas Hollywood 2.0. So I'm curious, do you guys have any thoughts on what the pros or cons of Las Vegas becoming a major city in the film industry might be? Hollywood 2.0.
Hollywood 2.0 sounds a bit, you know, ambitious. I would say maybe Hollywood 1.4, you know, sounds more original. But I could totally see it. And honestly, I see nothing but pros. The sort of more, you know, cinematic energy that is that is focused on Las Vegas, the better. It's still like relatively inexpensive to operate here. You know, travel is very convenient, right? We are a visual feast in many different ways, from crazy visual splendor of the strip in downtown to, you know, the beautiful, you know, surrounding desert. So to me, it sounds like a natural move. I know that the sort of nascent film industry and independent film industry here has, you know, for so long, I think they felt like they've been, you know, two steps forward, one step back, just kind of like, you know, languishing and flopping on the shore, trying to get something going. So I would imagine that they are very excited to hear this, you know, hear this news, because yeah. The independent film scene here is actually really lively. There are a number of, you know, cool little film podcasts too. So I feel like the local film culture will, you know, hopefully rise to meet this moment, and, you know, good things will happen.
Honestly, all I think we need to be Hollywood 2.0 is like just a big sign on a mountain. And we love a big sign.
That's true.
And we've got lots of mountains. And like, we're Las Vegas. We're that bombastic that we'll just put a sign up and be like, look, we're Hollywood now. And that's it.
We could take a page from BoJack Horseman and just be Hollywoo here.
I love it.
Perfect.
But I'll tell you, I mean, Las Vegas, like everything else, you know, we cannot forget our history. We have a long-standing relationship with the film industry.
Yeah.
It just never made it over the hump. And I agree with Andrew. You know, we are primed for it. We have a lot of the infrastructure. We probably need a little bit more. I know that film credit up in the Nevada legislature, tax credits are going to come back again. They were here before.
Some tax breaks.
Doesn't always produce the best product, Paul Blart 2, but, you know, it is great for Las Vegas, and hopefully the more that it does get focused here. And again, we've had conventions here before. We've had we still have CinemaCon that comes here, which is the movie houses, you know, come here and have their things. And
Right. That happens in April. It's basically pitching and showing off their upcoming films. Yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff. I mean, and Vegas is just such a natural convention place anyway. We also could be a natural production place. And it's not just Las Vegas. It's a whole damn state of Nevada. I mean, you know, with all the scenic stuff in the deserts, you know, Star Trek 17 can be right there at Valley of Fire. You know, they've done those things.
17.
There probably is a 17.
I mean, I like the idea, but, you know, I like the idea to the extent that maybe we can bust beyond the obvious. There are some amazing screenwriters who are living and working in our community. There are, like Andrew said, small independent films get made all the time. We do have some great podcasts. I know Josh Bell and Jason Harris are often talking about film. We've got Piecing It Together, which is another interesting take on it that's based out of Las Vegas. So yeah, we're ready for it. But let's just hope that if it does come, that we get some really interesting product out of it.
Hey, David, can you give us a quick explanation of the tax break that you mentioned?
Oh, sure. So it was proposed, and this is something we've had in Nevada before, but it was kind of on a much larger scale. One of our legislators had proposed that, you know, we incentivize filmmaking to happen in our state. And it stalled out in the Nevada legislature. There were a lot of people who thought that it might make a special session appearance because of people like Mark Wahlberg and Jeremy Renner, who are both now residents of the state. But it didn't happen. And now they're saying, well, we're going to give it another run. And it's essentially, you know, creating financial incentives through the way that the state taxing operates to encourage anyone involved with filmmaking to set up shop here and do it here.
So, you know, the movies that are normally filmed and set in Las Vegas are these casino-based, like, crime dramas, like Casino.
Or Leprechaun 3.
Oh, or Leprechaun 3.
It was on the tip of my tongue.
I mean, also The Hangover. Hangover, I feel like, is one of our kind of most famous recent movies. One of the weirder outliers in my mind is that part of the third season of Twin Peaks was set and filmed in Las Vegas, which I find kind of fascinating. But let's like take things in a different direction. So I would pitch me your Vegas indie film. What would you want to see get both made and set here in the city, in the valley?
I'd like to see a really indie version of the Paul Blart character.
Your favorite movie.
Taking it deep into just day-to-day life in Las Vegas as a working-class security guard who doesn't get into the shenanigans, but just has to kind of deal with the ongoing challenges of being a security guard in a place like Las Vegas. I think it could be a drama, not a comedy.
Wow, that sounds...
I think that there's a lot of... Yeah, I'm a sucker for everyday life. And there have been some really good indie films. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Frank and Lola, which was a film.
Yeah, Frank and Lola, pretty solid.
Solid film. Great cast. A lot of it took place in settings in downtown Las Vegas.
All right, Andrew. So what's your Vegas indie film?
All right, hear me out. Ocean's 14. Outdoing even their most spectacular casino heists, Danny Ocean and his crew bilk the LVCVA out of $60 million with the promise of an underground transportation system. Oh, wait, we're already living that movie. Never mind.
Oh, Andrew, this is social commentary. Okay, that's fine. But other than George Clooney, you have to go ahead and name the 13 other actors that you would cast.
Oh,
go.
Boy, we're going to need a whole nother episode for that one.
Get some local actors in there. Get Matthew Gray Gubler on there.
But actually, sort of to rhyme with David's really interesting Paul Blart movie, I think there is a lot of...
I can't let it go.
And kind of on a more philosophical note, I think that this conversation about, a film industry in Las Vegas, I hope that calls attention to what I see as like rich veins of storytelling potential and the really fascinating margins of, Las Vegas entertainment culture and, working life, right?
Yeah.
And I think there are so many good stories and to be told and films to be made about, the places where, our regular lives and, the strip, merge and interact, And I'm thinking about working people and how things are made and built and the sort of the grit behind the spectacle kind of thing.
Everyday exceptional. All right. Well, okay. Here's my idea for Everyday Exceptional. It's going to be a Disney Pixar film about a devil's hole pupfish. And maybe in classic like Disney heartbreaking fashion, the pupfish's mom gets like stepped on by some irresponsible swimmers that broke in. But then the pupfish is moved to the reservoir up at what ranch did they get moved to? Is it Spring Valley? They got moved somewhere down in the city.
Oh, I love the premise. I could see it. I could see the previews.
It's going to be great.
So the devil pupfish would be named Belzebub.
Belzebub.
Yeah, everyone loves Belzebub.
They got their name because they're supposed to be like really cute and playful looking. So like it can have drama. It'll feature unknown facts and unknown fish. I think it's going to be great. Well, let's go to the American Film Market and get some funders for these ideas. What do you think, gents?
Let's do it.
I think that there are great screenwriters in Las Vegas, and none of them are on this podcast right now.
What are you saying, David?
I'm saying this is not our forte, but we're good at other stuff.
We're good at other stuff.
I mean, we'd be good consultants. How's that?
I love the idea.
Right. And you know what? Speaking of boring company, if you're out there, we'd love to have you. Reach out. We'll put our details in the show notes. Come on the show, everybody. Prove us wrong. Thanks so much, gents, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Sounds great.
That's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. I mean, some big news that we didn't cover. Andrew is engaged to his longtime partner, Kim. Congrats to both of them who got engaged near a construction site near Lake Mead. So romantic, Andrew. Smooth moves. Our executive producer is Sonia Cho Swanson, and she had a birthday this week. Happy birthday, Sonia Cho. Enjoy your vacation. And our producers this week were Layla Mohammed and AK Al Mumin. Our newsletter editor is Rob Catchell-Reese, and our hosts are David Figler and myself, Sarah Lohman. Music is by OG Moose, Epidemic Sound, and all the kimonos. We record this show on the traditional homelands of the Nuwuvi, the Southern Paiute people. If you enjoyed the show, why not tell a friend, rate our show, and leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts, and also subscribe to Rob's morning newsletter. We'll be back Monday morning with more news from around the city. Take care.